Now, to share thoughts with us this evening, somebody that I have watched grow for many, many years, not so much in physical height, but in the inside of this man, I've watched him grow and grow and grow, and he gives a credit to God. He slips every once in a while. But most of the time, 99.9% of the time, that man is growing and growing and growing spiritually, soulfully, and reaching for God's hand all the time, except for one fraction, like one hundredth of the time. And this is our Dennis! Yay!
Thanks, everybody.
We love you, Dennis. Oh,
thank you. Well, Millie, I want to get my money's worth out of this life, and sometimes you got to be a little bad. Sometimes words just slip out. But I'll try. Well, thanks for coming, everybody. I have a little lighthearted talk tonight about something we've all thought about, consciousness and God consciousness and how we know these things. So I'll go slow. I'm going to end up reading a lot of it because otherwise I'll get tangled up, but I appreciate you bearing with me. Last week I had a good opportunity to talk with a friend of mine. He's a surgeon, and like most surgeons, he's got an ego as big as all outdoors, which is a good thing. You want your surgeon to think he can't do wrong as well as your airline captain. But he's a surgeon, and he also fancies himself to have this big intellect, which he does. He doesn't consider himself a major intellect, just a minor intellect. But when he talks, he is able to explain in detail his thinking processes and defend his ideas. And we tend to have one-sided conversations because I'm not an intellectual at all. And I just listen and enjoy listening, and I share when I can. And him having an ego, he likes to talk. Works out. Interesting to me, though, my friend is also an atheist. And recently we had the luxury of talking for a couple of hours about things, about God's participation in human affairs and or the lack thereof. I, for the first time, revealed a little more about my beliefs and about this religion of spiritualism. At the end of our talk, we both agreed that the universe does have some form of energy, and that we do have consciousness, as evidenced by our ability to think about ourselves. And we arrived at that common ground, and we both sort of shrugged our shoulders. Perhaps it's just a matter of semantics, a difference of the words we each bring. Energy, consciousness, is that God? I think both of us weren't quite sure where that left us. It was as though we both recognized that we'd run into some sort of wall, the wall of a great mystery. We both thoroughly enjoyed our talk, and we agreed to remain open-minded to discussion and to experiences. And actually, he promised someday to come down here and meet Millie. But I had bought my friend a book for Christmas. I ran across this book on the table, and it was titled "The Little Book of Atheist Spirituality." I saw that book and I said, "I know who this is for." Knew nothing about it, but it's by a French philosopher. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but André Comte Sponville, something like that. Now, my friend didn't get that book for Christmas, as I ended up reading it. And at first I found it kind of objectionable and a little bit disturbing. I kind of wanted to just stop reading it and to dismiss it because I didn't like I didn't like it. It seemed to me unsportsmanlike, though, to just kind of stop reading. And that I should have enough faith in my own convictions to at least be able to bear up under, some talk from someone else. I want to say, though, it truly was a real philosophy book. I mean, it took you all across. You really had to pay attention to it. But pretty soon, though, I found the book to be quite fascinating, and I ended up highlighting and underlining, and I spilled coffee on it, and I made it entirely too used to actually offer it as a gift. But just the other day, I did go out and buy another book, and I presented it to my friend, and in fact, that was what precipitated our talk. Now, the book itself puts forth some interesting ideas. It suggests that basically it doesn't matter whether you believe in God or not. The author writes, all fine people can agree that love is more more precious than hope or despair, that there is no reason to wait until we're saved. As humans, we have access to the kingdom here and now, the kingdom of love, of life as it is now, while we're alive on this planet. And he used those words. And the book suggests that belief in God or not, human life and our experience of love, of communion one with another, this leads to a growing appreciation for the good. Belief or not, we grow and evolve from a shared experience, that of knowing and living the energy of love. Now, love can and does work to change our consciousness. We become more and more aware of the inherent goodness of life. We naturally grow to evaluate how we treat each other. We come to value justice, kindness, compassion. Belief in God or not, fine people, as the philosopher says, develop a morality, or, to put it in religious terms, grow in righteousness. Now, I believe that my soul exists as the essence of God energy. Not that all of me is God. It's more like my soul has this framework, the framework of my consciousness, and the framework is part of me, and it's made of God. And my framework, my soul, is made of steel. It's strong. It's constructed perfectly. It's built to be eternal and flawless. Now, what I, as a craftsman, build and hang on to that framework, well, that's another story. Sometimes I am pretty disappointed in what I build, but fortunately God gives me all the time in the world to do an urban renewal project, to tear it down and rebuild it. But the primary essential part of me, my soul, my essential underlying framework is God energy. Now, Scripture suggests that the Spirit of God dwells in us, and all who are led by the Spirit live in righteousness. So my logic takes this and says, if atheists and agnostics grow in love, in appreciation for life, and in morality, then they are being led by the Spirit of God. They are living in the kingdom, whether they acknowledge it or not. And practically speaking, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter whether one thinks he believes in God or not. We all arrive, or at least head toward the same destination, toward growth in love and higher consciousness. Now, something I think we can all agree on is that the world is a scary place. Survival is not assured. suffering happens. Fear pretty much reigns over our feelings and our emotions and often dictates our actions. Is everybody okay so far? Okay, you look pretty good. So, you know, fear reigns over our feelings and emotions. And our ego then steps in and struggles to try to gain control. And we apply our intellect and our reasoning to, you know, come to solutions that will reduce our fears, that'll solve all current and future problems. And this works pretty good to a point. But the ego prevents us from actually being able to relax into the Spirit of God within. But what if we really did let go and let God? What if we let love rather than fear generate our emotions? What would happen to our consciousness if we were able to actually surrender to love? I don't know. But I do want to tell you about some of my other friends. And these friends are actually practicing letting go and letting God. And they're doing it from a love-based position. Many of you do know that I've been blessed to actually get to know Edie and Harry. Mm-hmm. And to get to help them with some of their daily chores and things. And as most of you know, Harry is 96. And Edie just, I think last week, had her birthday, and she's 93. The other way around. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Sorry, I didn't get it right. Harry told me the wrong numbers. So they like to have some help doing some cooking and doing some cleaning and turning on the DVD player and stuff like this. And my main responsibility, actually, is to kind of make sure that Harry's stable and doesn't fall over. So I follow him around close. Now, obviously, both these friends are facing and coming to terms with some hard realities in life. They're experiencing some scary changes, including changes in their memory and in their consciousness. And they're aware of it, to greater or lesser knowledge. And my prior chaplaincy training and experience calls me to want to help, to do and to say something that'll strengthen and encourage and comfort and bolster and just embrace the Spirit. Something that will comfort them, encourage. Now, it comes from my compassion, yes, but there's an ulterior motive. See, I get real uncomfortable, and there's a discomfort for me with the changes I'm seeing happen too. And my ego kind of says, oh no, do something. You know, say something to fix this. There's got to be a way to fix this and make it more easy. And so I do what I can. I read us Marianne Williamson's book, Everyday Grace, every morning at breakfast. And I practice sending healing energy. And I help ease Edie's fears by reminding her that I am there and I'm not going anywhere and I'm not going to leave her. And I remind them that we learn at church every Wednesday night that our angels are always with us and they help us and that we too never die, but only our energy changes form, that we will always live. And I keep them occupied and distracted with superlative meals. And I play my guitar and sing heavenly country and western songs. And one or two old favorite Grateful Dead songs. And Edie loves my guitar playing, don't you, Edie?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I do what I can, but I'm not really able to get to that, you know, let go and let God space. I run up against that wall, that wall of mystery where the answers stop and the shoulder shrugging begins. And shrugging your shoulders is nice, but it doesn't really scratch this itch. Now, I don't know if you've had a chance to talk with Edie and Harry, especially Harry. You'll notice that Harry, if you ask him a question about anything at all, he answers with a definitive and resounding, "Fine." "It's fine. I'm fine," he says. And you ask how he likes the food, and he says, "It's fine. Unless I cooked it." Then he often exclaims, "This is good! Did you cook it, Edie?" And I will tell him that I cooked it, and I feel all validated for a minute. Until he repeats himself a minute later, and he says, "This is good! Who cooked it?" Actually, it's a blessing to see. They both love to eat. It's amazing what mashed potatoes will do for these folks. So. Now, I've really only heard Harry complain or get a little short a couple of times. Instead, literally all of the communication that comes out of him is an assertion of love. He seems to just live in this expression of love. He constantly is telling Edie he loves her. And he tells me, privately, what a good woman and wife she is. And in the morning, when you wake him up, he grabs your hand and he kisses it and he says, "I love you." And throughout the day, he repeats, "You're awful good to me. And you're a good friend." And I tell Harry back that he's a good friend. And I say, "We get along real good together, and I like you, Harry." And I do. Now, sometimes Harry's not exactly really necessarily in the here and now, at least with me. But sometimes he is. And there are some times when he'll confide to me that he's kind of ready to move on. And he's not real sure why God has him wake up every morning. And he gets frustrated at times with kind of having to live with declining, you know, abilities and with nothing much to do and not a real clear purpose at this point in his life. And at these times, I get even more exasperated and my ego tells me that I should have some way to solve this. There should be something I can say. But really, he and I both know we're up against that wall of mystery. But often he and I will sit together, maybe at the table having coffee, or in the recliners watching TV. And I can't always tell for sure, you know, which here and now his consciousness is in. Mostly he's a quiet man. But often he simply reaches over and he takes my hand and we sit holding hands for a while. And a quietness settles over us. And we both lean back and rest comfortably against that mystery wall. No shoulder shrug is necessary at these times. We just hold hands in this quiet space. We let our consciousness rest. We suspend our questioning and cease the reflecting. We allow the release of anxiety. We drop fears and wonderment. And in that mystery space, we are sanctified in truth. To sanctify is to set apart for a sacred purpose. Set apart in a spiritual and pure place. And we both know the love and the peace of God is with us. It's a place where our consciousness rests in the here and now. It's a comfortable and reassuring place where our minds know it doesn't matter. God, not God. It doesn't matter at that time. It's a place beyond words and beyond definitions, beyond thought. It simply is a pure space where all is well. So I'm grateful Harry welcomes me to join him in this space of love. And I thank you all for coming out tonight.
Beyond the words of how nice, how good, how wonderful. Thank you, Dennis. It goes beyond all of those words, doesn't it? George, what do you say?
I think it's very well done. Very well done.
He almost explained the unexplainable. Janie, what do you say, John?
It's no mystery.
What a feast we just had. Please, everyone, when you have time, do spend a little time with the elderly. Get the growth that Dennis got. Dennis, there's no word suitable. It's just, yeah. Going back to the part of his talk about is there a God or not a God? What does it matter? To me, it matters because of the security that it gives me. But there comes a point that he brought to us this evening that it's unexplainable. Susan, you see so much in your job, don't you, honey? You learn so much. And yes, you get material money, but your paycheck goes far beyond. Susan works with the elderly. Paycheck goes far beyond, doesn't it? And Mary, Chewy, Paul. Dennis. Sometimes, and this includes Dennis, we can get so busy growling about ourselves that we don't even get to see our own good. I hope you can see your own good for a little while here, Dennis. That was fantastic. There really are no atheists, you know. That just goes as a name given to somebody that can't explain the unexplainable. And they don't know they can't explain the unexplainable. So they call themselves atheists. Myself, I kind of enjoy talking to atheists. What do you say, honey? Well, Dennis, that was good food, honey. Very good food. Next week, right here, same time, same station, it's going to be.